Good afternoon. We're going to open up the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is Monday, April 25th, 2005. I'm Representative Greg Smith. With me is Susie Jordan, our LFO analyst, and Kat Bell, our subcommittee assistant. We're going to start off today with a public hearing and work session on the Oregon Department of Transportation federal grant application request. Why don't we start off with giving us a little bit of background on what it is, and then I'm going to turn to the good representative.
Good afternoon, Senator Smith and members of the committee. I am Lorna Youngs with ODOT. I am the administrator of the DMV. Today we're seeking your authority to apply for a federal grant from Federal Motor Carrier. Federal Motor Carrier for the past several years has a strong interest in assisting states in acquiring the ability to verify Social Security numbers. Social Security numbers are used as the basis of identifying commercial drivers so that the commercial driver license can easily be moved from state to state. And so they are not only interested in our verifying commercial driver license numbers, but are more than willing to underwrite the expense for establishing that connection so that Social Security numbers can be verified for all drivers. We understood that there was an April 29 deadline for application for this year. We also understand that there is considerable interest on the part of the legislature. There's at least two bills in which Social Security verification is part of that legislation, and we thought a timely application would be useful. We've done more checking in the process. We have discovered that in fact, there is money available, and that it's money available for Oregon. And the reason for that is that we also made an application in 2002 for the same amount for money to verify Social Security numbers. At that time, we had an application deadline that met before the emergency board met in November. Therefore, we sent a letter to the co-chairs of the committee in August notifying them that we would be applying and that we would be asking for retroactive approval to apply, and then we would also be asking for authority to implement. We went before the November emergency board because we had received a grant of approximately $370,000. And at that time, the emergency board determined that since we were not collecting Social Security numbers on all drivers, it might be a bit premature to start the process of verification. But 3 years have passed. We are now collecting Social Security numbers on all drivers, and we think it's very timely. And so what I'm trying to inform you is that we still need permission to apply, but there is money earmarked for the state of Oregon should you grant that permission.
And so just to reassure the citizens of Oregon, this request is needed in order to comply with the Federal Welfare Reform Act. The Oregon legislature passed legislation to work with that in 2003.
And Mr. Chair, the collection of Social Security numbers is necessary for the compliance with the Welfare Act. The verification was not a necessary component, which was why it was not included in the 03 bill.
Got it.
This is an additional component to help make sure that the data that we're gathering in our database is accurate.
Got it. Any questions of the committee? Good representative.
Thank you. For the record, my name is George Gilman. I'm state representative for District 55. Salona mentioned we have two bills in the Transportation Committee requiring a confirmation of Social Security numbers. It looks like maybe there'll be a third one, one of my priority bills, to do that. I'm just convinced that it's a little bit ridiculous to take the Social Security number and then not do anything with it. And I know some of us are a little concerned about Big Brother and government, but I'm just convinced that we need to verify those Social Security numbers. And fortunately, the money's available, and better yet, there's no matching amount of money for it. It's just a straight grant. So I sure encourage the committee to approve the request.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Verger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lorna, the question is for you. I understood there were 31 other states that already verify Social Security numbers. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, yes.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Please.
The other thing is, before when you applied, did it have anything at all to do with citizenship?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, no, it did not. It was an opportunity provided to us by Federal Motor Carrier to verify Social Security numbers so that we would have good data in our database. It was not an issue of citizenship.
Thank you.
Okay. Cora.
Mr. Chair, I'll actually defer to the legislative fiscal analyst on this as I'm sitting in for the Christina Scheer, who is the budget management representative. But my understanding is that BAM concurs with the legislative recommendation.
Susie.
Well, we'll need to wait for a work session, but the legislative fiscal office is recommending approval of their request to seek permission.
Any other comments or questions of the committee? Why don't we recess this federal grant application request until we have a quorum, and then if it's okay, we'll bring you folks back up and we'll
Thank
take
you.
Action on that. Mr. Chair, I'll make sure we pass your comments along to the rest of the committee members. So. Okay. So with that, we're going to recess the public hearing on the Oregon Department of Transportation, and we're going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5508, Economic and Community Development. And colleagues, I want to set a good positive tone for the public hearing we're about to undertake. There's been a lot of discussion around the building, both positive and negative, and a lot of assumptions. And one of the things I guess I've learned even after three terms is when folks assume, they tend to assume to the negative. And I think there's a real opportunity for this subcommittee to work with the department to create an economic development strategy that all of Oregon can be proud of. And what I hope we'll start off with in phase two of this presentation is an opportunity for the department to come before us and share with us their vision and their goals and the tools that they have and will need to achieve that vision and those goals. What I'm going to ask of this committee is to ask good questions, feel free to ask questions as you have them, because I want to make sure that each and every one of us come out of here feeling good that we've all worked for the betterment of Oregon. So with that, we have Robin Lamont, our LFO analyst, with us. Cora, are you going to come up and join us? And then I think we'll have Marty Brantley, the Director of Economic Development, start off the day.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. My name is Marty Brantley, Director of Economic and Community Development. We have scheduled about four very busy days because there were a lot of questions that you all have of us, and we tried to take some pretty good notes on the first phase, if you will, and respond to that. And so over the next 4 days, we hope to answer many of those questions that you have. We're starting off today with both Film and Video and the Arts Commission, and they have representatives here with them, too. Tomorrow, perhaps, I can start off with an oversight a little bit of some of the tools that we use within the department, and we have some people that would like to participate in that discussion that we work with on an ongoing basis. And, in fact, that is one of the tones that I hope that we'll be able to impart to you all, and that is that we desperately need the local and regional participation, and virtually everything we do includes them, too. And so there'll be some people from the regional and local areas that will try to explain a little bit of how we interface together, too. So if it's all right with you, Mr. Chair, at this point, I will suggest that the Arts Commission and the Film and Video group come on up and make their presentations.
Okay. We'd like to have one come up at a time. Do you want to do that? Why don't we have the art folks? Chris, do you want to come on up? I want to assure everyone here today that we'll have plenty of time for public testimony. And so if you're here today to share your thoughts with us, we'll make sure that we include you into the process. With that, welcome, Chris.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Chris Darcy. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust. Joining me here at the table is Cynthia Adams, who is the Chairman of the Oregon Arts Commission, and she is going to begin our testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm really happy to be here today to share with you the vision of the Oregon Arts Commission and the work we do. I'm Cynthia Adams. I live in Kaiser, Oregon, and I work at the Collins Foundation up in Portland, where I'm the Director of Programs. The Collins Foundation is a general-purpose foundation that makes grants, investments in the arts, actually not unlike the Oregon Arts Commission in some respects. The Arts Commission is a 9-member board that is appointed by the governor to establish policies for the state of Oregon governing arts, cultural development across the state, and to manage arts and arts programs and services for Oregonians. It was established several decades ago and for a long time was an independent agency. In 1993, it became part of the Oregon Economic Development Department, a move at the time which we thought was a very positive one, and at that point there were other parts of Oregon Economic Development Department that the Arts Commission also participated with, among them Oregon Progress Board and the Oregon Tourism Commission. Questions sometimes arise about the Arts Commission, about the Arts Commission's inclusion in economic development, and we feel it's a very, very good marriage. We can be very involved in the innovative and creative enterprises in Oregon that we see emerging today. We can also participate in rural and community development efforts, and we can as well make connections with cultural tourism and with the continued development of Oregon's film and video industry. All are important to leverage for a better Oregon. In 2003, the Oregon Legislature moved the operations of the Oregon Cultural Trust in with the Oregon Arts Commission, streamlining the trust's operations to make better use of the Arts Commission's grant-making expertise and community development work. We support the trust wholeheartedly, recognizing its potential to create opportunities for Oregonians, more opportunities for Oregonians to enjoy the cultural assets of their communities, and also to encourage new and increased investments in Oregon's arts, culture, and humanities. The Cultural Trust is guided by a separate board appointed by the governor, includes seven appointments from the governor and 2 members of the legislature. Charlie Walker of the Oregon Cultural Trust is with us today, and he will also be speaking with you. The Oregon Arts Commission is the only state arts agency for Oregon. It provides leadership, funding, and arts programs through its grants, special initiatives, and services. The Arts Commission is responsible for cultivating the arts in the communities throughout our state. We do that through arts advocacy, policy making, and planning, by seeking funding for and making grants to the arts, and by building coalitions between public and private sectors and between arts and cultural organizations to build participation across the state. The Commission is Oregon's primary state funder for the arts, granting funds annually through 6 competitive grants programs. In Oregon, the majority of the arts programs we have are delivered by nonprofit arts organizations. Some of these are very important to the economy of the state, like the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and those organizations, for example, that are part of the cultural district in Portland. To give you an idea of the economic impact of the sector, 554 of the 1,200 Oregon arts, culture, and humanities nonprofits reported gross receipts of $309 million in 2003. And by the way, that wasn't a very good year for any of us, was it? There are three reasons why I'd like you to think about the importance. What is the importance of public support, public investment in arts and culture? I'm going to leave you with 3 words before I turn this over to Chris. Those words are opportunity, access, and value. Opportunity to create an Oregon where we all want to live, to work, and to do business. Access for people of all ages, backgrounds, economic levels. Access, it's really important. And finally, the value of the arts in creating, fostering human creativity. The value of the arts for our students, for our workforce, and for creating a strong Oregon. Chris is going to talk with you further about how we do our work and why we do it. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Share with me really quick. How did, when the structure of this portion of the department was made, how was it decided that the arts and the cultural trust would be brought together, but not folks like the state parks, but the State Historic Preservation Office, or entities like the Oregon Historical Society? How is it these folks got in here and other folks were left out?
I don't know. I wouldn't call it left out, but I would say that during the 2003 legislature, every effort was made to streamline and make things really efficient. And Chris, I'm sure, has some really good remembrances from 2003 and what the strategies were.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I could probably answer your question briefly. And the short answer is that during the 2003 session, when reductions were made to the budgets of all aspects of state government, arts and culture were looked at as a particularly likely place for deep cuts to be made. In fact, the Arts Commission took a 50% general fund cut in going into this biennium. We looked for ways to preserve what we thought were important things to be preserved at the time: the experience, the grant making, the programming of the Oregon Arts Commission, and the innovative funding mechanism for culture, the new Oregon Cultural Trust. We proposed what we thought was a solution. I think that solution is working, and we became roommates, and we are good roommates together, economizing on staff, economizing on rent, economizing on our overhead. You asked whether other cultural statewide entities should have been part of this. Two of our statewide partners operate as private nonprofits, 501c3s, the Oregon Historical Society, and the Oregon Council for the Humanities. They are not government agencies. The state parks, which houses the Heritage Commission and the Historic Preservation Office, they maintain the status quo.
Do they work with you folks?
Very closely. In fact, they moved to the North Mall building right across the courtyard from us.
So that, just so I'm clear, and the Heritage Commission is located with you folks.
They're in a separate, Mr. Chairman, the Heritage Commission and the State Historic Preservation Office are part of state parks.
Right, I understand that.
There is a Heritage Conservation Division there, which deals with many of the heritage assets which are within state parks, historic trails, some historic buildings. The Shampooey site would be a good example of one of their heritage-filled park sites.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll pick up where Cynthia... Stay here. Okay. Where Cynthia left off, both the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust are concerned with using art and culture to benefit Oregonians. We are roommates, but each entity has a different emphasis, and the mission of the Oregon Cultural Trust goes beyond the arts, way beyond the arts, to incorporate heritage, history, and the humanities. The goals of the Oregon Arts Commission are to build support for access to and increase participation in the arts. We use grants, programs, and special initiatives to do that. We're also concerned with increasing and stabilizing funding for the arts. We serve 150 to 200 arts organizations a year with our grants, and we're very concerned with increasing arts education opportunities for Oregonians of all ages. The Cultural Trust, specifically, is about increasing resources for culture, building the Cultural Trust Fund to protect and stabilize Oregon cultural resources, helping to create a legacy to support these for the future. The Trust is also concerned with expanding public awareness of and access to and use of culture. So experiencing the theater, using libraries, preserving historic materials, but ultimately ensuring that Oregon's cultural resources are strong and that they can contribute to the Oregon that we live in today and that we're building for support for in the future. What do we use for tools of our program? Both the Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust do certain things. We both make financial investments in arts and cultural organizations, artists, and other nonprofit entities. As Cynthia suggested, the world that we work in is really a world where the services, the programs are largely provided by nonprofits. So, the Corvallis Art Center, the Coos Art Museum, historical societies in small towns across the state, regional arts councils like the Eastern Oregon Arts Council. You'll hear today from our partners at Ethos in Northeast Portland. So we make grants to these kinds of organizations which help them provide arts programs and services across the state. Cultural infrastructure. Both entities support a network of program providers who make local plans, set local priorities, provide local services. In Portland, it would be the Regional Arts and Culture Council. On the Cultural Trust side, the Trust has spawned the development of 45 cultural coalitions, each working on a county basis and within the 9 federally recognized tribes, to set priorities for culture and award local dollars. What else do we do? Both of us forge partnerships with other agencies, funders, and sectors to leverage resources for arts and culture. On the Cultural Trust side, it might be forging a relationship with the state's major foundations to help support the operations of the Cultural Trust in these early years. It could be a partnership that the Arts Commission has with the National Park Service. We're funding a special pilot program in Tillamook County, the development of some artwork in conjunction with the ecotourism efforts at the Hawk Wharton Slough, mirroring our efforts to link a local economic development with local arts development, and totally locally driven in terms of what's happening. Finally, both of us provide communication, information, and technical assistance. So there's a lot that we do together, and we serve overlapping constituencies. 2 very specific tools were approved by the legislature in 2001, and this is what makes the Oregon Cultural Trust so important. 1, thank you very much for approving an Oregon State tax credit, the Cultural Tax Credit, which allows Oregonians to increase their support for culture and increase funds to build the Oregon Cultural Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. The second tool that was given to the Cultural Trust was a special cultural license plate was developed. The pinkish, salmon-y colored plates that you see on the highways now, which are brand culture and cars across the state and help remind people of the Oregon Cultural Trust. The Arts Commission's grant programs really are our tools to advance participation in the arts. We have 6 targeted funding programs that we use to support the operations of professional arts organizations. We have programs that support specific arts education activities, which help to train a competitive workforce for the 21st century, and we have a community development initiative. We also have created tools for our partners to use in terms of data that we collect about the arts across the state, information that we make available to them, trying to build the capacity of the arts organizations. As Cynthia mentioned, a survey of the 1099 submitted by just 550, and remember there are about 1,200 of these organizations, just 550 arts and humanities nonprofits indicate gross receipts of over $309 million. So as you'll hear from one of our guests later in the day, the arts do mean business. They are permanent jobs, and they are jobs that are here in Oregon. Another thing that you might find interesting in terms of our work is the fact that over 20,000 artists live and work here, many operating as small businesses in their communities, maintaining studios, hiring people to work for them, creating their works of art. Over 4.2 million people attend arts events in Oregon each year, with about a third of those people traveling to Oregon to experience the arts. People driving to Ashland to experience the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, people coming to Portland for major festivals, the cultural activities in the cultural district, and people coming here in the summer to experience the many outdoor music festivals, summer productions that are underway. some of the things that the Arts Commission has completed during this biennium are an expansion of our efforts to provide arts education services in rural Oregon, working with partnership funds that we received from the Ford Family Foundation. I think another good example of the ways that we are working with our partners in the field to leverage resources which ultimately increase benefits to Oregonians and Oregon communities. We supported programming in about 97 different schools across the state over a three-year period with this new funding partnership. We developed a new arts recognition grant program, understanding that our state funding was reduced pretty severely this year. We knew that many times a grant from the Oregon Arts Commission represents a stamp of approval, the good housekeeping seal of approval for a small, medium, even large groups. We struggled to provide our stakeholders with the amount of grant support that we've had in the past, but created a new recognition grant program, which gives them a lot of promotional assistance and a small financial stipend to help them leverage private and business support in their own communities. We provided technical assistance to some new initiatives statewide, including the Oregon Crafted Project, a project linked with tourism and funded by the Oregon Tourism Commission, identifying artists, artist studios, and then promoting visits to those those studios through some mapping and loop tours. We know that Oregon's creative economy is growing. We know that young creative types are moving to Oregon, particularly Portland, and we're working with business associates in Portland to see how we might help foster further development and promote those organizations and small businesses more actively. Finally, with funds from the Oregon Cultural Trust, support from the Governor's Office and the Oregon State Library, the coalition of the statewide cultural partners, the Arts Commission, Historical Society, Heritage Commission, and so on, will reinstate Oregon's Poet Laureate. What does all this mean to Oregonians? Our financial support gives people greater access to culture, helps make ticket prices more affordable. The partners who accept grant funds from us agree to provide community outreach, arts education. We're helping to increase links between culture and other sectors, like small business. We are definitely promoting the development of cultural tourism product, and we're promoting more availability about cultural opportunity across the state. Outcomes and results. The Arts Commission, through the grantees that it supports each year, helps Oregon arts organizations retain 3,000 full and part-time jobs in nonprofit organizations. We support about 150 nonprofit arts organizations offering public programs. And we supported programs that offer over 6,000 arts presentations or events each year. Our arts education efforts support training and technical assistance to better offer the arts to all Oregonians. And we actually train those organizations to help make their programs available to people with disabilities. Our arts education efforts have expanded through our partnership with the Ford Family Foundation, our outreach to rural schools. Working with a network of regional arts education programs, we served 151,000 youth through our regional and rural arts education programs. The Commission also facilitates and advises the selection of works of art through the state's 1% for Art program. And finally, our programs really are about building social capital in Oregon and contributing to an environment that's attractive to business. Performance measurements. The Oregon Progress Board has measured the performance of the Oregon Arts Commission through benchmark number 37 until now, measuring the annual per capita state appropriation for the arts. We know that we are interested in outcome-based performance measures, not input-based investment numbers, although I am not proud to be the director of the State Arts Agency with one of the lowest per capita appropriations for the arts. But we are working very closely with the Progress Board to really look at an outcome-based measurement. We put a survey question on the Progress Board's 2004 population survey. Preliminary results show that the rate of participation in the arts in Oregon is extremely high, much higher than the national average. How our program compares to other states? Again, The national average in terms of state funding for the arts is over a dollar. The investment that Oregon makes is about 16 cents per person. Our neighbors, our closest neighbor to the north, would make about a double the investment that we're making. In terms of cultural comparisons, the Oregon Cultural Trust is considered a national model, and not just maybe a national model, a significant national model. It is the first integrated cultural revenue source, the first fully integrated cultural support system that brings together the heritage, history, the humanities, and the arts. How do we manage all this? We are very small, very lean. The Arts Commission has 5.5 FTE. I function as the executive director of both. We have an executive director, an assistant director, a visual arts coordinator, and part-time community service and arts education coordinators, as well as a full-time executive assistant. Two additional FTE work for the Cultural Trust, a trust manager and a support staff position. The Arts Commission applies for and receives federal funding from the National Endowment for the Arts. We are the designated state arts agency for Oregon. We expect to be awarded close to $600,000 in the coming fiscal year. In addition, we collect management fees for the coordination of the state's public art program. The Cultural Trust, in terms of its revenue sources, has statutory authority to receive funds in three ways. Number one, direct contributions from Oregonians and businesses in return for a receipt of a tax credit, sales of the cultural license plate, and the opportunity to for surplus state assets to be commissioned or be transferred to the trust. I'm going to let Charles Walker, chair of the Cultural Trust.
Senator Johnson, we're going to have your question. Then I'm going to actually recess you folks just for a moment so we can take care of the Department of Transportation while we still have a quorum, and then we'll come back. So, Senator Johnson.
Would you go back and explain what you just said, Chris, about surplus property being transferred to the trust?
By statute, Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just answered my own question. You're talking about land, not
yes.
Stuff. I'm sorry.
I'm going to
gift card.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
We did a bill this morning that spoke to this issue, and I just hadn't transferred my thinking. I apologize. I've answered my own question.
Colleagues, I'm going to do a temporary recess of Senate Bill 5508, and I'm going to open up the public hearing on the Oregon Department of Transportation federal grant application request.
They can just stay at the... I think they were asking.
Why don't we actually have you just step back just for a moment, because we do have committee members up here, and I'm going to ask Department of Transportation just to do a quick overview, and then we'll do a work session.
We need to open a work session.
Okay. We're going to open the work session, excuse me, on the federal grant application request being brought forward by the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to recap the request that we have before you, Federal Motor Carrier Administration has made available to states the opportunity to apply for grants in order for us to connect with the Social Security Administration to do verification of the Social Security numbers that we collect. We collect Social Security numbers for both commercial driver licenses as well as the issuance of our regular Class C driver licenses. We had put this request before you because the deadline for this year for application of grants was the 29th of this month. And we understand that there is at least two bills working in the House side that would require Social Security verification, and it seemed prudent to put this request forward. As we have done more investigation, we have discovered that an earlier grant provided to the Department of Transportation in 2002 by Federal Motor Carrier for Social Security verification is in fact still alive in existence and available to us. So if this committee is willing to approve our request to apply for that, we most assuredly would be able to obtain the resources to do that verification.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you've covered this, but we've had some members join since mm-hmm. you came in. I want to make sure that my assumption of this is clear. We would still have to do this work under federal mandate, if we fail to approve the grant, we'd be doing it without the $245,934. We still have to do the work, though.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, currently we are not required by federal statute to verify Social Security numbers. Social Security Administration, Motor Carrier, has made this money available because they recognize the importance of that verification, but it is not at this point a federal prerequisite. It may very well be a requisite of the federal legislation that passed in December of last year, the Intelligence Reform Act, that would require all states to have a uniform driver license issuance process sometime in the future. But what we are doing is, should there be passage of bills in this session that would require verification, we would like to have federal assistance in moving forward with that. There's federal opportunity, there's opportunity to apply for the money, and in fact we have learned that we have money earmarked for our agency, and so we felt it prudent to bring this before you because as of yet, we have not official approval to even apply for the money.
Thank you. Senator Berger.
Yes, thank you. Lorna, you're familiar with the biometrics bill that is now in process, Senate Bill 640. Wouldn't there finally be at some point a requirement that there be a verification of Social Security for that particular bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Verger, that bill does not speak to verification of underlying documents. That bill only requires the collection of biometric data on individuals as they apply or reapply for driver licenses, and this is a separate issue. This speaks more to the verification of underlying documents that people are providing as proof of their identity in lieu of providing a biometric as proof of their identity.
All right. Thank you very much for clearing that up.
Any other questions or comments?
Chairman.
Senator Carter.
As approved by the Legislative Fiscal Office, I would like to move the request for federal grants by the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Senator Carter moves the LFO recommendation to approve the federal grant application request as brought forward. Any objections?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bacon wanted to be able to
vote. Okay. And we'll grab Representative Avakian. I guess he wants to vote on this. To the full committee.
Just good thing I'm here.
Good thing we have a co-chair with us. A couple of co-chairs.
Oh, God, he is a trip.
You ready to vote?
Ready.
All right. We have a motion from Senator Carter. She has moved the LFO recommendation to approve the federal grant application request as brought forward to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. We need some. Do we need carriers? Senator Carter, would you?
She was trying to put a gorgeous shawl.
Senator Carter will carry the federal grant.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to close the work session on the Oregon Department of Transportation federal grant application request, and we're going to reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 5508, Economic and Community Development Department. And we're going to ask those folks to come on back up. Thank you for allowing us to interrupt you temporarily there. I believe Representative Avakian had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Darcy, I want to go back to this notion of opportunity and access. And I think you have very well stated the connection between your mission and the economy in Oregon and job creation and revenue enhancement and such. But I want you to talk about it from a little bit different perspective, too. As you know, this committee has been on the road over the past week, and I think it was Tillamook that told us that they have eliminated all of their elementary school music programs. I know in my district in Beaverton, there no longer exists any bands, orchestras, or choirs in the elementary schools, and what used to be a nationally known and thriving arts program now only has 30 minutes per month of art instruction for children. And what I'm wondering is how your mission has changed or been enhanced in any way because of what's happened to music and arts in our public schools.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Avakian.
Young audiences?
You're absolutely right. The mission of the Oregon Arts Commission and the mission of the National Endowment and the mission of the National Endowment for the Arts have always placed a very high priority on arts education. For many years, the Oregon Arts Commission Artisan Schools Program placed artists in schools across the state and those artists in residence for a two-week period or a month-long residency were the frosting on the cake and the added value to the work that was being done by the classroom teacher or by art specialists. I would describe the topography in Oregon in terms of arts education provided in schools on a sustained basis by specialists as being as varied as the topography of Oregon. Vast deserts, mountain peaks of success, and deep rivers of efforts underway. And I will say, just for the record, that here in my hometown in Salem, my hat is off to the hundreds, the thousands of parents who have made music education a part of the culture of this community and who can literally stop traffic to attend a school board meeting. What have we done about it? Again, partnerships. Working closely with the Oregon Alliance for Arts Education, the Oregon Department of Education, and our regional partners across the state, we have and with funding from the Ford Family Foundation, we have been partners in the development of an Oregon Teacher Art Institute, bringing together 100 classroom teachers from across Oregon in a residential setting to learn about how to teach the arts in their classrooms. Because we know that right now, the classroom teacher may be the last line of defense for providing those services. That does not help in the world of music, where it's pretty hard to teach a 40-year-old classroom teacher to play the cello well, not to mention the rest of the instruments in an orchestra. But I will. I know that Bill Ryberg from the Oregon Symphony will be testifying later. He can speak a little bit about some of the other things we're doing, because we provide grant support to arts organizations to take their programs into the school. I am a mom. I have two children who have benefited from music and art programs to date, but I'm just glad they're not in elementary school right now, because the fact of the matter is most of the arts programs are being provided by the classroom teacher at this point.
One more, Mr. Chair, if I may. Educate us on who else out there provides this kind of service. I mean, if we continue to lose music and arts programs in public education, I'm going to assume we're going to, because I don't see us restoring those programs right now. And if we don't enable you to have the ability to fill the gap as you've described, who else out there exists that's going to take on that charge?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Avakian. All right, we're working with our partners on training the classroom teacher. Another partnership we're involved in is a partnership with young audiences and a regional consortia of arts education advocates and program providers, the Eastern Oregon Regional Arts Council, the Arts Council of Southern Oregon, the young audiences in Portland, and the Salem Art Association here. Each one of those nonprofit arts organizations is collaborating on the training, the pre-service training for teachers with Oregon's colleges of education, Portland State, Eastern Oregon University, Southern and Western, making sure that the core curriculum for teachers' training includes the arts. And there are some incredibly talented deans of the schools of education on those campuses. We are also really fostering the collaboration of the professionally staffed large arts organizations, enabling them to go into the schools and do pretty extraordinary programs. And you will hear about one of those programs with the Oregon Symphony.
I'm gonna ask a leading question, and I ask it a little bit facetiously, but it's going to lead me to my second question. Are there no foundations available in which you folks can try and obtain other dollars? Why are we using general fund?
Mr. Chairman, we believe that funding for arts and culture is really a partnership. The bulk of the support, the financial support for the arts and culture in Oregon, comes from private individuals who buy tickets, who make contributions, and who volunteer their time to make arts and culture a reality here.
So which position here on your organizational chart is the person that goes out and chases money for the state of Oregon to leverage the small amount of investment the state gives?
There are two, Mr. Chairman, there are two of us. I do a fair amount of it. We've raised the administrative funding necessary to support the Oregon Cultural Trust, working very closely with my colleague, Charlie Walker, sitting next to me. We have had very, very strong support from the Ford Family Foundation for some of our arts education partnerships.
So who writes the grant to the Ford Family Foundation?
Our staff person with responsibility for arts education, working closely with me.
Is that arts education coordinator? I'm assuming that's a program rep 2 position?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Is that the only responsibility of that position?
Mr. Chairman, the responsibility of that position is to really coordinate our arts education efforts, knitting, because we do not have full-time staff, she acts as a facilitator, linking the efforts that we have underway, whether it's partnerships with the large arts organizations, the Department of Education,
so
the Alliance for Arts
Ed. What if you had a staff member whose sole job was to to research and to serve as an advocate from the state of Oregon's position to submit applications on behalf of these different agencies? Is there an opportunity to take the limited dollars we're giving you and leverage those and generate other dollars?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I believe there is advantage.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I have one.
Senator Berger.
Yes. Chris, I just wonder if you remember back when during my mayorship, the city of Coos Bay funded the art education program for a couple of years by themselves, and then they formed a partnership with the schools. The first partnership, the funding came from the city, and the work of the artists going into the schools came through the art museum. That doesn't replace any of the work that you've done in partnership with the Coos Art Museum, but it did fill a gap with art education. Have you tried that blend of local government with local artists and then with some part of the education, the school districts at all in providing art education?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Verger, yes. You could probably make a list of the communities in Oregon, and each one probably would have an innovative way of funding arts education. Different partnerships, you used the example of the Coos Art Museum, and I believe that they had some foundation funding in addition to their local funding. Other organizations do fundraisers. There are citizens who make generous contributions in some areas. There are many strategies underway.
Representative Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're a public body, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And just because we're creating a record, this isn't a question for you. Following on the Chair's good comments about funding, as a public body, I would certainly hope that this legislature evaluate you as a public body and fund you accordingly. We don't, for instance, ask the state police to go out and seek grants from the Ford Foundation in order to put patrolmen on the highway. And hopefully we're not going to have public schools go out and look for private donations in order to stay alive and as a public body. And those comments are not meant to imply that the chair was going that way in any way. But as a public body, I hope we would evaluate you like we do all public bodies and fund you as one.
Well, let me expound on my comments. What I'd like you to provide me and the committee is a list of all a good representation of available funding sources that are available in terms of both public and private sources of revenue. And I'm just curious what money the state of Oregon is leaving on the table in terms of available resources that if we had a position or two who could serve as an advocate on behalf of the state of Oregon, what's available out there. So if you could provide that to us before round 3, we'd appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just conclude by, before I introduce Charlie Walker, Chairman of the Cultural Trust Board, with just a report that given the reduction in state resources going into this session, the Arts Commission reprioritized its programs, put together a task force of constituents from across the state, and we are now operating with the five priorities: continued grants to arts organizations, statewide services advocacy and technical assistance, community arts services, really reaching out to the grassroots, addressing arts education issues and challenges, and then looking at the best ways to support artists and creative workers. It is my great pleasure to introduce Charlie Walker of Neskowin, the chairman of the Oregon Cultural Trust Board, who will talk a little bit about the really very impressive accomplishments of the trust since it was first approved by the legislature in 1999, and then its funding mechanisms were approved by the legislature in 2001. So, Charlie.
Welcome. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Charlie Walker. I live in the village of Neskowin, and because Chris and Cynthia have covered so much ground, I would simply like to tell a snippet of a story. A story that to some degree you and I both know, but what I'd like to lift is a part of it that may not be as well known. The snippet begins in the legislative session of several sessions ago now, in which a bill was introduced that was the result of almost 5 years of preparation. And when it was introduced and it was voted upon by senators and representatives of both parties overwhelmingly, so that I believe in the final analysis, when the total vote was counted, were only 3 or perhaps 4 votes in both houses together that were against it. We felt very good. And then very shortly thereafter, the Oregonian ran an editorial. And in the editorial, they were reviewing the legislation passed in that session. And the editorial pointed out that the best, most significant, most important, having the greatest long-term impact of any piece of legislation of that session was the bill creating the Oregon Cultural Trust and the program that went with it. Within a couple of months, the Pew Memorial Trust in Philadelphia published a little book in which they surveyed all of the cultural activity and organizations and plans in the future in the whole country. And I lift it only because the Pew Memorial Trust people said, and the program worth watching, the program with the greatest potential in this nation is going on in Oregon with the Oregon Cultural Trust. So naturally, those of us who had been living with it for 5 years were on cloud 7. No question. And then the crash came. And you remember the crash came in the summer. And the piece of property that Tillamook Creamery in my county had purchased over in Boardman that was to come to the Cultural Trust, the governor said, now we're sorry, but we have to take half of that money. And almost momentarily thereafter, the legislature said, and we regret the fact that we have to take the rest of it. So it came in and went out very quickly. At the same time, the governor and the legislature, so far as I know, decided that there should be a merger of the Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust, that the Cultural Trust would no longer be an entity on its own. And we accepted that because we were interested in survival. So we went from Cloud 7 down to the valley very, very quickly. And when we were in the valley, there was no money from the general fund for administrative costs, as meager as they might have been at the time. There was no money to take from the 7% that might have come from this sale, the income from the Boardman property. We had nothing. We literally had nothing. So we had to make a decision, and the decision was there is never only one way to do anything that's important to do. And so we said, in this moment of difficulty, we will go to the private sector. We went to the Meyer Memorial Trust, the Collins Foundation, Jimmy Miller's Trust, now called the James F. and Marion Miller Fund, the Murdoch Trust, and some others. And we said, it's a brilliant idea. Everybody in the country is saying it's the best there is, including the legislature that passed it so overwhelmingly. But we need some money to make it go. And fortunately, they stepped up. And they said, okay. And we asked them to help us for 3 years. And they said, no. We'll help you for a year at a time, and you show progress each year to get the next year. And that's what we've been doing. And it's working. And it's working, everything considered, very well. Now a thumbnail to close. We have raised in the last couple of years $5,300,000 from Oregonians who gave it voluntarily or who bought a license plate. That's the only source of the money. That's not quite true. There are a few people who have given money beyond the tax credit for which they got no benefit, but they wanted to contribute further. The most recent gift was $11,000. Now, $5.3 million is not a gigantic amount of money as you look at the state's budget, but it is not insignificant. And that $5.5 million has been used strategically so that money has gone to every county in the state of Oregon. In every county, there is a county cultural coalition, and they identified what's important to do in that county to lift cultural opportunity. They have their priorities. We give them a very modest amount of money based a fundamental base for all, and then build on it according to population. They have now been around long enough that they have made grants. In my county, Tillamook, there does exist now a program every summer for 55 youngsters who go there after they finish their farm chores or their part-time jobs and do sculpture or art of different kinds according to their interests instead of getting into trouble. That will happen this coming summer because of the Cultural Trust support. And you can replicate that county by county. Clackamas County just recently published their first list of awards, a long list of awards, very small awards, but very impressive. I read program requests for the Ford Family Foundation, and it's beautiful now to see these people saying, we're asking you for support, and we already have had an investment from the Oregon Cultural Trust. It's almost like the Oregon Cultural Trust is a good housekeeping seal of approval, which is beautiful, even though we all know the money is not very great. Well, you have been very helpful. You acted at a critical time in 99. We played the game when the state was in very difficult situation. We now have a big network. 550 people in these cultural coalitions throughout Oregon. Over 1,200 cultural organizations throughout the state. Five principal partners originally identified by the then governor. And nine of us on the board of the Cultural Trust. And every one of those 1,200 organizations have scores of other Oregonians who are benefiting. All I can say is, I know things aren't great now, but I hope you will hold on to everything you can for the Cultural Trust, because it has now proven its ability and has the potential to do what it was originally set out to do. And then finally, when the time comes that you can give the Cultural Trust a boost, and it will need a boost, and a second one, and a third one, at the right moments when it's possible, that when that time comes, that you will act as courageously and as boldly and with the great wisdom that you acted with in 1999, because we have hold of something that will make a fundamental difference in the quality of life in the state that we live in and enjoy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
really quick, I want to ask a few questions. Why do you Why do you think... Let me step back. What do you see as the economic opportunities for arts in Oregon?
Well, I was interested in your question, and obviously it wasn't appropriate for me to respond to it, Mr. Chairman, but since you now address it to me, what I would say is that, speaking for the foundation that I know best, we have 5 or 6 or 7 requests for every dollar that we have to distribute. So no money is being left on that foundation table. No money whatsoever. Whether it flows through the Arts Commission or the Cultural Trust or goes directly, that money is already 100% being invested, and our parameter is Oregon for our foundation. Those are the boundaries. So I wouldn't want to guess that there is, and I'm going to be kind of cautious here, I wouldn't want to guess that there is very much private foundation or charitable money being left on the table in any foundation in this state. Doesn't mean there can't be more requests for what exists, but there's being nothing left on the table.
Do you feel like there's an opportunity to take existing state dollars and leverage them into greater resources?
I think we're doing a beautiful thing in taking state dollars, taxpayer dollars, and leveraging them right now with the Cultural Trust, because initially leaders of some of the major nonprofits that are cultural in this state were very much afraid that the Cultural Trust would take money away from them. In fact, the reverse is what happened. I have a small music organization on the coast, Neskowin Chamber Music. We have had a 16% increase in charitable giving from the people who normally give to us because of the Cultural Trust. The Cultural Trust presence for us leveraged 16% more money this year from our normal donors. Why? Because they wanted to be sure they had given the local cultural charities enough so that they could qualify for their $500 or $1,000 gift to the Cultural Trust with a tax credit. So I think there is leveraging going on. I think it's very clear. Murdoch just gave the Cultural Trust $185,000, and Murdoch leveraged that. They said, we will give that to you over a 3-year period on a declining basis, providing you can raise enough money so that when ours is gone, you can keep that position going for the Cultural Trust. I mean, we're all trying to leverage. We're all trying to make as much money, as much purchasing power appear out of very limited resources as we possibly can. And I commend all of us for doing that.
Senator Morrison, then we'll go to Senator Johnson.
I think the senator was ahead of me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Please,
Senator Johnson, ladies first, then Senator Johnson, then Senator Morris.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to make the observation in response to what I thought you had asked Dr. Walker, and that was the linkage between the arts and economic development. I would submit to the committee and people listening, Exhibit A would be the town of Joseph. People are drawn to Joseph. In another life, I used to manage the airport there and made the argument that the airport was an integral part of that fabric that supported Joseph. People that are coming in to look at a $150,000 upward sculpture are most likely going to utilize air service to get there. And I think that the arts have been one of the transforming elements in the revitalization of an economy that had been naturally resource dependent. And as that changed, suddenly was this renaissance of the arts in Joseph that now enjoys an international reputation. And I see the clear linkage between economic development and the arts, and Joseph is an example.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Refresh my memory. Is there a cap on the amount of, not per individual, but in the purpose of the fund of the tax credit?
Yes. An individual, pardon me?
For the corpus of the fund on a biennial basis?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morse, no, there is not a cap.
Okay, thank you. Follow-up.
Please.
Has there been any discussion with respect to... this is the issue that Representative Avakian raised, and it's distressing to many of us to see the... I'm so emotional, I can't talk. The disintegration of music programs in public education, and it's happening all over the state. My question is, has there been any effort and outreach from the commission to local schools and local districts to encourage them to raise money for their music programs by virtue of the tax credit and build upon that so that they can restore some of these really very important programs? And I raise this in the context of a fundraiser that was put on by the Albany Public Schools. It was very well attended to raise money for music. And I don't recall anywhere a mention of the potential of a tax credit by virtue of funding the Oregon Cultural Trust.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morse, yes, you are absolutely right. So we are working with these music booster groups. One of the challenges of the trust is reaching every one of the 1,200 cultural organizations and the accompanying booster clubs of every school in Oregon with essentially a single staff person. But I am very happy to know now that the Albany schools did not mention it, so we will contact them and make sure that they do.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, as long as my good friend and colleague, Senator Morse, has taken the opportunity to plug his, the Savi Island Music Festival is on May the 12th, and I'd like you to reach out to them as well. I'm just teasing, Chris. I think the point that we're trying to make here is Friday and back to school day, I spent it in a school that was getting ready for their all-school musical. The reason that music program exists is because the parents went out and raised the money. And I would like to join with others on this panel to suggest that anything that the Trust or the Arts Commission can do to focus attention on not only the visual arts but also music in schools, I think would be very warmly received by most members of the legislature.
I'm going to gang on to this and then pass to Senator Morris. In Heppner, in the Morrow County School District, we're on a four-day school week. We now have... all athletics being paid for by the parents. PE is taken care of by the homeroom teacher. The homeroom teacher also does the lunchroom. But music is still funded through the Morrow County School District. Starts in fifth grade and is a requirement and is required up and through eighth grade. And as a result of that, I can share firsthand with you the benefits to the children in Morrow County. My son is fluent, if you will, in three different musical instruments. And just to show you that not all of Eastern Oregon is culturally deficit, Morrow County has stepped up and made the investment because they recognize culture as part of its economic base. So, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your indulgence in allowing these questions to continue. I think it's important. My question is, do you have the ability to create a sub-account within the trust specific to a region that goes out and raises the money?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morse, not at the present time, if I'm understanding your question correctly. So let's just say that Lynn County raised X number of dollars for music education in Albany. Could they create a special fund within the Cultural Trust, which would then go back out to them? And the answer is no, for this reason. The Cultural Trust is a statewide venture, and there is a balance of funding streams out from the trust, competitive grants, grants to the cultural coalitions, and grants to support statewide activities through the cultural partners. What the trust could do and does do is to provide a direct grant to Lynn County to support priorities of their choosing, according to the cultural plan they've developed. Did I answer your question?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you're getting there. People give to institutions and projects that they have a special passion for and an interest in. So communities support communities. To the extent that you could facilitate that in these music and the arts, by district, to allow the community to come forward and take advantage of this tax credit, could be a huge boost to the arts in our public education system. And so that's where I'm leading is, you know, how do we accelerate that in a way that helps these programs in schools where there presently are no programs or very little in the way of programs.
I would guess now would be a good time to ask for a couple more FTE.
Speaking of FTE, that leads me into some budget questions. And if you need to bring someone else up here, I appreciate that and I thoroughly understand it. Can you share with me in the organizational chart why the arts executive director position is a manager E position and not an F or at least an F comparable with other peers on the same chart?
Mr. Chair, I'll respond for that's where that position has been reviewed and classified by both the personnel section of the department and confirmed, I would assume, at least at one point in time by the Human Resources Division of the Department of Administrative Services.
Would it be possible to to have some type of scope of work analysis shared with this committee? I'd be interested in knowing
like
how.
A review of the position description, confirming that that's where the position still appropriately rests.
Right. When I look at the chart of responsibilities and I go across, it looks like every position is a principal executive manager F, and then we get to the arts executive director and it's a manager E, and I'm curious how that is, knowing that we have like 12 business development officers that are manager F positions. So I'm curious how executive director is rated lower than.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'll work with the department and with HRSD to take a look at that position.
Okay. Is it possible for you to share with us how much of your budget is spent on central support? How much is taken out of your budget for central support to the department?
Yes, we could get that information to you.
Is there anyone in the audience who can answer that today?
Yeah. I just wanted to confirm, but Mr. Chair, members of the committee, none.
Okay. Would it be possible, knowing that this is a question, I'm going to ask it across the board, and perhaps we can get that information tomorrow for the full committee to know how central support is allocated across each funding source?
Mr. Chair, the answer is that the department does not charge the Arts Commission for those activities.
Excellent. That's excellent. Terrific. Thank you. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we have one additional person who is scheduled to speak in our formal testimony, a representative from Ethos, Inc., which is a music education organization in Northeast Portland. I know time is running quite a bit over our allocation. I just wanted to let you know that she is here.
We appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Thank you. Would you like her to come up now, or would you like to bring her up during the public testimony course?
She'll come up at the end.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other questions for the Arts Commission or the Cultural Trust?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question, but I just had a comment more for the committee. And that is, you know, the Oregon Coast Music Festival brings in the Maritime Art Festival. And these are all huge events. There's the lab band program that is all volunteer and all these things. But none of those things replace what happens with the Arts Commission. I didn't want to suggest that by talking about the the city and the partnerships there, that I think in any way it replaces the work that the Art Commission is doing. So I wanted to, for the record, to clarify that.
I have one last budget question, if I may. Can you share with me how many businesses that I guess could be classified as entrepreneurs that could be classified as artists have received funding from the Strategic Reserve Fund or from any of the loan programs offered by the department?
Mr. Chairman, the one that I can think of immediately is department support for a project called Oregon Crafted, which is also being supported by the Tourism Commission, and it is a project that pairs some business development consultants in Eugene with artists who are living in Lynn, Lane, and Benton counties. And this is the project I mentioned earlier where the artists are being identified. These are particularly artists who have studios where making and selling works out of their home or from their farm, you know, basically business, small artist businesses with attractive settings, which will be linked through a visitor map and the artist's capacity to increase retail sales from these home studios will be increased. It is a work in progress.
What's the funding stream on that again? Oregon Crafted?
It is called Oregon Crafted, Mr. Chairman. This is a project that received a grant from the Oregon Cultural Trust. There is some support coming from the Oregon Tourism Commission, and there is some support coming from the Economic Development Department. I don't know which fund source is making that grant.
Is there someone in the audience who would know where that funding source comes from? Mike, I see you nodding. Could you come on? You could just introduce yourself for the record real quick.
Chair Smith, members of the committee, Mike Burton, Community Development Division Management Department. The money's coming from the community assistance programs of the department.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Since this ethos person,
Veronica, you ready to come up for film and video office?
Since this ethos person might be one of the only real public people we have here today, let's make sure we get them.
You got it.
Do you want me to bring it up right now then?
No.
If we manage our time and make sure we get it. Right. Just 5 minutes.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I need to sit over there.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, she's getting settled. I just want to say that as she discloses what role Oregon Film and Video played in the most terrifying movie I've ever seen, The Ring 2, the percentage of their participation in that movie may dictate where my vote went with respect to this issue. Gratuitously terrifying movie.
That's what tells. We don't write them, we just recruit them.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have some of the people who have come to testify with me kind of coming and going, so I'm going to hope that they're here at the appointed times. But I will begin with just a brief overview. For the record...
Really quick, Veronica, how much time how do you want to do this?
If I do my former Weather Girl act when they used to say, oh, your 3 minutes is down to a minute and a half, I think we can probably do this in 25 minutes or half an hour if I'm allowed to go 5 minutes over.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we go 25 minutes, and then I know that certain committee members may have to leave. I'm going to stay and continue to allow the public testimony process to play out. I'm going to encourage all members to listen in if they have an opportunity to, or to stay if they may.
Mr. Chair, also, if you would rather, I could have my guests who are still here make their testimony today, and I could come back tomorrow if that would be better for your process.
Yes.
Is that what you'd like to do?
Yeah.
I want more time to explore the Weather Girl comment. We don't want to limit our time in any way.
Well, we're trying to manage all this. Is that what would be the preference of the committee. Why don't we do that? Is that all right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I need to see who's still here. Uh-oh.
Have they left you?
I only have one of them here at the moment, but I will start out, and I have a brief video to play that's kind of a good beginning overview, and then whoever I have remaining with me, I will ask to come up. For the record, my name is Veronica Reiner, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Film and Video Office. I have been with the office since 1991. I've been director since October of 2001. Our office was originally created in 1968 when Governor Tom McCall realized that actively recruiting film projects could pay off in a big way for our state in terms of outside dollars coming into our economy and creating jobs for Oregonians all around the state. The fact that they come here and shoot their movie and then leave was probably also particularly attractive to that governor. The Oregon Film and Video Office is now a semi-independent state agency as established in ORS 284. We are charged with building the film, video, and multimedia industry, both by recruiting out-of-state projects to come and shoot here and working to enhance and build our indigenous industry within our state. More detail about our specific statutory requirements is in the original budget document that I submitted through OECDD. We are guided by a 5-member board, which is appointed by the governor, which represents both finance and film and video production people. And if I can get the technology to work here, I now have a brief video to show.
Oregon, the beautiful state that we call home. Oregon's beauty is one reason the film and video production business has been successful here. Yes, Oregon film means business. In fact, the latest numbers show that in the year 2002, film and video production created more than $835 million in economic impact in the Oregon economy and created more than 10,000 jobs. That's over 10,000 jobs that put food on the table for real Oregonians. There's a long, proud history of major motion pictures filming here. And, of course, world-class brands, as well as Oregon-based companies, also pump millions of dollars into our state. So you can see that it's not just Hollywood big shots that fly in for a couple of weeks, although we're happy to have them spend money in our state. No, it's the thousands of Oregonians who make their living in this clean, renewable industry that make the difference. Out-of-state film and video productions brought $525 million into the Oregon economy over the past 10 years. That's money that goes to crew people, builders, caterers, hotels, local stores, and small businesses. And it's money that gets spent all over the state, not just Portland, but also in Eugene, Bend, Hood River, Astoria, Pendleton, Medford, Ashland, Newport, Mount Hood, Alvord Desert, Wallowa County. You get the picture. Overall, the economic return on investment for the Oregon Film and Video Office is $195 to 1, and for the State General Fund, it's $4.80 to 1. Those are great numbers in anyone's book. And remember, the film and video industry is clean, non-polluting, and sustainable. But most importantly, it's the community of Oregonians who make a living in this industry. From all walks of life, from all corners of the state, these men, women, and families rely on film and video production to make a living. It's a real industry with real economic impact for real Oregonians. So support the film and video industry, because Oregon film means business.
With that, I will ask David Kress, who is with Food Chain Films and also a representative of the Oregon Media Production Association, which is a trade organization for the state, to come up and say a few words.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Thanks. I think I've been called before the committee because in addition to having a company, I'm the executive producer and a partner in a small commercial film production company called Food Chain Films.
I'm also a consumer of both the our film office here and film offices around the country and, in fact, around the world. My company is about 10 years old. We've shot in, I think, 33 states and several countries. And we really depend on film offices. All of us who produce films really depend on film offices. It's become very vital to the way we operate. Let me first start by telling you a little bit about our business. The modern film production business resembles, I think, closely it would look like, say, a construction firm, a builder. It's not the way it was several decades ago when there were big studios that employed cameramen and owned cameras and stages. And the technology allows us to get to locations, and locations tend to be the best, most suitable, most realistic, and cost-effective ways to shoot. The way we determine a location sort of boils down to four basic... the decision-making process boils down to four main factors. The quality of the location, its relationship to the other locations needed to tell the story. The ease of use of that location, the relative distance from a film production center, a place where there's the infrastructure to produce our business, and the cost. We very much rely on our film office here to remind us to remember the really great places we have to shoot in Oregon, and we also use other film offices from around the country in order to determine those factors necessary. I won't go on too much about the business because I think that the video did a pretty good job of talking about why it's a great business. I love being part of it, and I would urge you to fully fund the film office for a couple of reasons. One is there's two main benefits that I get as a business owner in the indigenous Oregon film and video business. The first one is direct. The film office can help me navigate the different venues I have to go to for permitting, for regulations. Also can connect me with a good location with the private owner of that location. They can also serve in some cases to sort of legitimize our business. It's a very odd business, and it's hard for people to understand what we do, and sometimes an introduction from the film and video office is the necessary legitimizer to get us to talk to a location. The other is a little harder to explain, and it's a real indirect benefit. What happens is we really are blessed in Oregon to have a pretty good regional film production infrastructure. I'll go other places and shoot, like Boston or Miami, and there's not a lab to go to. And in Portland, until a year ago, we had a lab, a place to go. We also have other big pillars of infrastructure. A lot of equipment is available to rent here, very well-trained film production workforce, and a lot of good post-production equipment. And what happens is that equipment, when the film office is able to recruit a movie or an out-of-state producer to come in and utilize that equipment and to utilize the personnel who I will also call upon to do to work in productions that I do, it helps keep the business healthy, keeps that infrastructure running, it helps train those people, and helps bring in that really high-tech equipment that we need in order for my company to appeal to the Fortune 500 companies and ad agencies that use us. That's basically what I wanted to come and say. Appreciate your time.
As a company in the state of Oregon, if you were king for a day, what would you have the state of Oregon do to help the film and video industry?
Mr. Chairman, I think what I would like the most is for Oregon to try to get in front of the curve. There's a number of states competing for this business for the reasons that were outlined in the video. And, in fact, I hear those pitches pretty regularly, including pitches. I've had pitches from other states to move my business to another state. And I think we've sort of relied on the fact that it's a beautiful place with a pretty advanced infrastructure. And what's happening is why we did that. Other places who wanted this business have built their infrastructures up. And it's a little bit sad to see the deterioration. I think it's not irreversible, but there's definitely pressures from other places that are really, really aggressively going after this work. And there's incentive programs.
What do they provide that Oregon doesn't?
Well, there's incentive programs, and it varies from place to place. Sometimes it's cash back. Sometimes it's tax credits. Sometimes it's services that you may have to pay for in Oregon that aren't charged. For instance, New York, when they watched which is one of the main production centers in the United States, when New York started to lose its business, they granted free parking, free permission to shoot on public locations. In fact, they not only allow me to park for free, they come hood the meters for me, and they bring me and they send me a couple of police officers to make sure that everything is going smoothly where I shoot. I know we can't expect, given the state of our economy, for everything, but you did ask for a wish list.
I think that's excellent. Who helps companies get through the rules and regulations, the parking permits, the using a state park? Who helps?
I think that's primarily the film office's role for both in-state and out-of-state. I know my first call, producing here for 10 years with Food Chain and for 5 years as a freelancer before that, I'm fairly aware of who to call. But even with that deep knowledge, there's still, I would say, 1 in 10 calls starts with the film office for a little help. And when I'm out of state or for an out-of-state producer, I'm sure it's the number one call. They start at the film office and then work their way through.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, I would now like to ask Ron Mitchell, who is a television producer and also a member of our Film and Video Office Board, to come up, as well as Bill Cross, who is representing the Oregon Association of Convention and Visitors Bureaus.
Perfect. Good seeing you again.
Good seeing you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ron Mitchell. I live in Depot Bay. I've been producing movies and television out of Los Angeles for the studios for over 35 years. And just as an aside, I did a movie in St. Helens 10 years ago, maybe now?
Halloween movie.
Halloween Town, yes. And we had a wonderful time.
Section of Ring.
But you got free will.
I'm also a member of the board of directors of the Oregon Film and Video Office. As a member of the board of directors, I must tell you that this office spends their money very wisely. They obviously, you know, have very little money to spend, and they don't waste a dime of it. And they've accomplished a tremendous amount through Veronica's hard work and the other members of the staff with little funding. Basically, I need to be here today as one of those outside producers from a foreign country, Los Angeles, that would like to come up here and make movies. I've produced hundreds upon hundreds of hours of primetime television over the years. And when I go on a location, what we producers expect is a film office that's going to come after us and give us reasons why we should come to the state. Once they get us to the state, then we expect service, and we expect a representative from the office to stick with us, to guide us through all the regulations of the city, the state, the county, to help us with locations, to point us in the right direction. In the case, and this is very specific, in the case of Halloween Town, Veronica at the time was a field rep then, and she was the first person I met at the film office, and I came to the Portland area, not knowing a soul, not knowing anything about the area. And she stuck with me till we found production offices, till we found our location, put me in touch with the right people. As far as getting crew, we used, I think, 85% of the crew were Oregonians. 100% of the crew were extras. We used literally thousands of days of extras. A good many of them were local actors. But without someone to service the producer to make sure that the producer is going in the right direction, producer feels kind of lost in a strange area. And that's one of the functions. And that's just not somebody on the phone saying, hey, how are you doing? You know, what do you need today? It's someone who is physically there with you to guide you through. And, of course, that involves a certain amount of money. But it comes back tenfold to the company. We look for an office where the people in the office can talk the film language to us. They're not just someone who was thrown into that office who was totally unprofessional and just answering, you know, the phones. So within our office, all the people working there are highly professional. They understand the film business. They understand how we think. And I think that this is very, very important. If we want to bring jobs back to the state, and if we want to get filmmakers back to work in this state, then we have to have a professional film office. The competition out there, it's not just Canada anymore. The world has changed in the last couple of years, and our main competition now is almost every state that wants to develop the economy of their state is going after film business. And I just think that it's necessary that we continue to fund the film office and be as highly competitive as possible.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
I'm going to tee off the chair and ask, when you define highly competitive, give us some examples of what would make us more competitive, if you would.
Well, I think we're already addressing the financial incentive part of it, and I think as far as being competitive within the film office, it's maintaining a staff that can service the inquiries, that can answer the questions, that can handle more than one or two productions at a time when they're here. People that are, when we had the budget cuts the last 2 years ago, whenever it was, our people were working, taking salary cuts, but they were still working. And most of them worked full-time, even though that they had salary cuts. So there's a certain amount of professionalism there, and you need to maintain the professionalism with a certain amount of money. It's not an awful lot of money, but it certainly is funding that will guarantee that we can keep the professional people that we have, and also to be able to go to the shows, the different trade shows, the Los Angeles show, the New York show, to talk to guys like me and say, hey, you know, we've got a professional film office here. Not just beautiful scenery, not just, you know, some crew people, but we also can help you and make your life easier. If you make my life easier in doing my show, then I, by the very nature of it, I'm saving money. So there are ways to save money that are not just asking the state for money.
That does cue me up. Well, Senator Johnson, then I'll...
Just opportunistically, because there's an expert sitting here, I'm told by different communities that... I'm looking at you. I'm told by different communities over my service in the legislature that the presence of sound stages, and I don't know what all that means in the nomenclature of your business, but production facilities, I think, may encompass sound stages, that having big... professional sound stages would make Oregon much more attractive. Is that the case, in your opinion?
You know, that's even an argument within my community. I can only give you my personal view, and I don't know whether it goes for or against the popular belief, but if I have a facility, sound stage implies lots of money, lots of soundproofing, clear spans, you know, give me a warehouse. give me a warehouse that's not under a flight pattern. Okay, I can make them. I must tell you, for the past 15 years in Los Angeles, they wouldn't let me on the Fox slot because they couldn't afford me, my company, my production. So they always put me in a warehouse somewhere. And it was close to Fox, but Fox only wanted the big feature films, and I make television shows. So the feature films came on the Fox lot, big sound stages. But the television shows were put into warehouses, and they could have been any kind of a warehouse. And we do whatever we could to soundproof them. But if you have some warehouses around where we can get in for rain cover, for a set, you know, that's standing in case it rains, and we go in there, or for what we call blue screen, where, you know, the effects kind of shots. For me, doing television movies, that's enough. As a matter of fact, we used an old warehouse on that show, and I can't remember exactly where it was, but it was up in the area. And we were allowed to paint the wall blue, and then we did all our flying and special effects on the brooms and everything there. So for me, it's not a soundstage so much as it is economic incentives to give me as a producer to be competitive. I'm not looking for getting money from a state, but what I am saying is that because of Canada and now because of New Mexico, Louisiana, and all the other ones, they're offering money. So as a producer, I'd be a fool to turn it down.
Mm-hmm. Let me feed into that question. What is our competition doing? And who is our competition?
Well, Veronica knows that better than I do.
Well, when you
New Mexico is offering some really, really good incentives. Louisiana is. Canada still is. Canada, last time I checked, you know, there's a difference with the dollar right now, but there are rebates. Pardon?
What's a good incentive?
You're going to pin me down on a figure now?
If you were looking at doing business in Oregon versus Washington, Idaho, Louisiana, what are you looking for? Veronica, maybe?
I'd say, you know, a 15% rebate or incentive is a good, it will really get my attention. I think we have 10% now, don't we?
In development.
In development. But a 15%, that, for the kind of work that I do, the price tag that I have for making a movie, that's really good. That gets my attention. Now, included among that is when I would begin to analyze. So you need to get the producer's attention. That would get their attention. Now when they begin to peel the layers back and go and start to examine the other benefits that Oregon would have, then we can start talking about, well, you know, maybe locations are cheaper than if we go to New Mexico where they're giving you more money.
So, Veronica, have we done an analysis where we've looked at what our competition is doing versus what Oregon provides, and looked at the rate of return to the state of Oregon based upon multiple options?
Mr. Chair, yes, we have. The most competitive places within the United States right now are Louisiana and New Mexico. Louisiana offers, I believe, a 15 to 20% labor rebate and a 10 to 15% investment tax credit, or vice versa. But what they offer is tax credits that the production companies then have to go and sell, and they're selling those at a deep discount. But they have increased their business from about $40 million per year to last year. They did $350 million in out-of-state production. New Mexico, which is one of the other states that is constantly thrown out to us as one of the most competitive ones, offers a 15% refundable tax credit, which means if the production company does not have a New Mexico tax liability, the state writes them a check. However, production has to choose between a sales tax exemption or the 15% of spending rebate, and so they are still paying sales tax. Oregon having no sales tax then can be competitive with perhaps a smaller percentage because we don't have that sales tax. If we want to be the most competitive, then, you know, we would need to be looking at something that was 15-20% of their budget, but there are places that are doing quite well. New Mexico, I believe, has increased their production from $8 million a year to $80 million a year.
So help me with this question. Earlier we had the arts people up before us, and Senator Johnson was able to identify a community in my district, Joseph, that made a conscious decision to move in that direction of having an arts-oriented community. How do communities in Oregon decide they're going to become a film and video community? Heppner has a 120,000 square foot building available. How does this work?
Mr. Chair, some of the considerations for film companies are the availability of local crew and the infrastructure that David Kress was talking about, the equipment rentals, the camera rentals, post-production facilities, that sort of thing. There are communities in Oregon that are building local film industries, Ashland being one, where a Los Angeles producer has basically relocated there. He has shot one of his own low-budget movies and is planning another, but he also has designs, at least, to create a film and video educational center as well, all centered around what he calls spiritual cinema. Also, Bend has a lot of people moving from the industry, moving to the Bend area, and is beginning to have enough people there in the industry that we could look to start building that as a center for filming. But at this point, the center is really Portland because of the services that are available there. Productions will go out to more rural areas, and you know we've had productions in every corner of the state. It really depends on the type of production and whether their budget allows them to be able to house crews, and whether the community can house a crew if there isn't local crew available. So it's kind of a complex equation that goes into all of that. I think that's why most places that have production incentives do it on a statewide basis. It is the state government that's offering the incentives, and then sometimes local communities add to that with their own incentives. So, for instance, if we had a good state incentive and we had a local community saying all of our locations are free, all of our parking is free, and we have this building that productions are welcome to come in and use either for free or for a very reduced rate, that's going to put them as a community at an advantage. But it's pretty hard for local communities to come up with kinds of incentives, the level of incentives that are being offered in other states by themselves without the state participation.
If Schwarzenegger ever does a kindergarten cop too, can you forget Astoria and
you want your budget to have my vote?
Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Schwarzenegger might have a little bit of pressure to keep his next production south of that border.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Monica. Who would you like to...
Mr. Chair, we still have Bill Cross here.
Bill Carter.
Mr. Chair, committee members, just a moment. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Convention and Visitor Bureaus. We speak very loudly of the office. They do a lot of work in terms of the single source of contact for the state. They then partner with the local communities, and the impact on communities, as you've already seen, is significant, not only for the money that is expended at the time of the film, but then for future tourism. A lot of tourists will come back to communities and explore the areas where they've seen these movies filmed. So it's not just the economic benefits of the making of the film that is the only benefit to local communities. They work very closely with the CVB's, the Convention and Visitor Bureaus, in terms of coordinating the efforts to get those movies, or productions into a specific area, and then working with them on all the logistics. And it's really nice to have, one experienced office that we can deal with. So we just wanted to add our two cents, so to speak, and to urge your support of their budget.
Mr. Chair, before I have to go to my next committee, I just want to validate what Mr. Cross is saying. In Astoria, I bet a week doesn't go by that somebody doesn't show up in the chamber office and want to know where the Goonies house is or where the kindergarten cop house is, school is. And it has a long-time residual effect. You can still go to Astoria now and buy Goonies T-shirts. It's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Knock yourself out, girl.
Bill, share with us the relationship between film and video and the tourism commission. Is there a working relationship between those two entities?
I'm not quite as familiar as the relationship, you know, with the tourism commission at the state level. I know they work very closely together, but I don't know exactly how they interact. I'm more familiar with, obviously, once they've decided to do something in Bend, for example, well, then the local CVB works very closely with their office.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Who would you like to come up next?
Mr. Chair, those are all the speakers that I had scheduled to come with me. If we are sticking with the previous plan, I believe I would do the rest of my testimony tomorrow. Is that?
Or we are. We're going to go to a public testimony in a moment. I have a few questions I want to ask before we go there. And these are budget questions. Earlier, I asked about the cost allocation plans for House Central Services. Let me find my question on this. What percentage of your budget is going to Central Services? Can you share with
Mr. Chair, as a semi-independent state agency, we are a line item pass-through, and we handle all of our own administration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're now going to move into public testimony. Mr. Ryberg, is he out there?
Mr. Chair, for just for your purposes, all of the public, the persons who testified invited by the Arts Commission and Film and Video also signed up as public testimony, so you may see some repetition on that list in those who have already presented.
Got it. Okay, thank you very much on that. Well, why don't we do this? Is there anyone out in the audience who would like to speak? Come on up. Welcome.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Michelle Bas Barba, and I am with Ethos, Inc. It's a music center that's located in Northeast Portland. And I'm here because music matters very much to us. And because of the Oregon Arts Commission and Oregon Cultural Trust, thousands of youth around the state have been exposed to music, either education or concerts, things like that. Ethos is dedicated to making music accessible to any student, regardless of socioeconomic situation. And we, you know, basically want to be able to equal the playing field across the state educationally. It's already been proven through many studies that music can help in a variety of ways. It can help with attendance in school. We actually had a program at Listos, which is the alternative high school with the Oregon Council for Hispanic Advancement right in downtown Portland. And we were working with Hispanic youth there doing guitar lessons. We found out that those students often would only come to school on days that they knew they had guitar class. And the way that the school was organized is if they came for one activity, they had to stay for the whole day. So because of that, they were increasing their attendance there at school. You know, it can help just with overall achievement in a variety of ways. And Ethos started back in 1998 because valuable music education programs were being cut from public schools. We're focused on the lower middle income families because those are the ones taking the hardest hit. Families that could afford it were taking private lessons or, you know, able to get that in different ways, attending concerts and whatnot. We have a variety of programs to achieve what we do. We do group lessons, private lessons, school assemblies, community concerts. We help schools set up their own after-school music programs. We do community concerts. Anything that has to do with music, we're involved in it. And one of our most recent projects, which was supported by the Oregon Arts Commission and the Oregon Cultural Trust both, was called Crossing Borders. And we brought a guitar quartet up from Mexico City and did a tour of the 10 counties around Oregon that had the highest percentage of Hispanics. And this idea for the project came about because of the rapidly growing Hispanic population throughout the state. Because of our work in rural communities, we learned, you know, that
like out in Boardman, within the span of 8 years, their high school went to becoming 50% Hispanic, and they weren't even able to communicate with the parents of their students. So we started this program, and both the Oregon Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust supported us not only financially, but they helped us with letters of support, office support. That way, we were able to leverage funding from the U.S.-Mexico Fund for Culture, and we got another grant. We were one of only two projects selected for music in the United States by that organization. And that's in great thanks to the Oregon Arts Commission. I'll try to keep this as brief as possible. I could go on about all the instances. I mean, just in that project alone, with the 10 counties we visited, you know, we went out to NISA, to the high school out there, and the kids there said they had never had a music assembly in their school. And they have a nice auditorium. It's just set up perfectly for it. We've been out to Heppner. We've been out to Boardman. In Boardman, we did a community concert there with this guitar quartet, and it was one of the first times that they had had their Hispanic parents come to some sort of an event at the school. And so they were very thankful for that. The Oregon Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust have helped us in so many ways, not only with our inner city projects. We have one called the Hip Hop and Urban Music Project that we do in a lot of the schools in North and Northeast Portland. They've helped us with our rural programs, and now we've been to 29 different rural and mid-sized towns throughout the state. And they've also, this year, they're helping us with overall operational funding that has been a great help as we try to accommodate for all of the budget cuts in music education. Most schools don't have music programs. Ethos is trying to fill, Ethos and along with the other organizations that the Cultural Trust and the Arts Commission fund are trying to fill this void that exists. And because of them, we're making it happen. So thank you. That's all I had to say.
Thank you.
Well, I'm just sure glad she doesn't have very much enthusiasm or passion. Thank you, Michelle.
So in your opinion, do you think that music and the arts is a key determining factor for businesses in determining where they want to locate?
Well, it probably depends on the business, on what you're talking about. But culture, you know, it's a biological function. Music is a biological function of man. You know, anthropologists study it, scientists study it. Back to the Greeks, it's always been such a key part of what makes people who they are, how they spend their time. You know, and you need to teach kids how to read. You need to teach them how to write, how to do math. But you also have to teach them how to live and enjoy life and, you know, how to connect it all. And that's something that music can do. You know, they combine all of these skills in a way that they enjoy. And myself, if I had a business, I would rather be in a community that has a good spirit and good cultural base.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who else would like to testify?
Actually, Mr. Chair, to answer your question.
Yes.
I mean, after businesses evaluate the economic opportunity, then they look at the education infrastructure, then they look at
very
arts,
important.
Culture, entertainment opportunities for their employees. I mean, it's third on the list after your second, if you consider.
You know, and actually, then it goes beyond the employees and the people making the decision. It goes on to the spouses. And one of the key factors that folks look at when they're looking at locating in a community is not only will it meet their needs, but will it meet the needs of the spouse. It's a major issue. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
You.
Who would like to go first?
I will. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Ryberg. I'm president and CEO of the Oregon Symphony in Portland. And I'm here to speak in support of the bill and to talk a little bit about the Oregon Symphony, and in particular, based on the discussions that I've overheard so far this afternoon, to talk particularly about our community engagement projects that have been going on throughout the state of Oregon over the last couple of years. The Oregon Symphony was established in 1896. It is the oldest major orchestra on the West Coast. Our performance home is the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland. Our music director in his second year is Carlos Calmar. You may have read about him in the newspaper on Sunday. We have 88 full-time musicians. We perform a little over 100 concerts in Portland at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. And then we also do over 300 concerts annually throughout the state of Oregon. Our budget size is $14.5 million. The income from our tickets covers about 41% of our income. So that means we have to raise, from a fundraising perspective, about $7.5 million each year. Our revenue, by the way, at 41% of overall income from ticket sales is above the national average. Most symphony orchestras raise about 35 to 36%, so we're proud of that figure. As I mentioned, we do have a statewide presence. We are the Oregon Symphony, and we are one of the state's largest nonprofit performing arts organizations. As such, our education programs reach more than 60,000 children and adults each year. In 2004-05, our symphony education and community engagement initiatives have reached 17 counties representing 260 schools in Oregon and Southwest Washington. We've had 58 performances in the Portland metro area, four youth orchestra concerts, 36 kinder concerts, as we call them, which are for very small children, a PYP, which is Portland Youth Philharmonic Side-by-Side Concert, which is an opportunity for young musicians to sit next to the professionals and play in a concert setting. We do free parks concerts. This past year, Glenwood and the Waterfront, we did parks concerts. Those are funded by the City of Portland. And a community concert in North Bend, Oregon, which is coming up on May 6th. As far as our activities outside of the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall and the 300 activities I talked about, of particular importance and the funding from the Cultural Arts Commission and the Cultural Trust, they really support our works in our community residency partnership, which is in its fourth year. It's a two-year program. It's a competitive process where communities under a population of 30,000 apply to the Oregon Symphony to literally have the Oregon Symphony come into a community for a two-year period. Once a determination is made on which community wins the competitive process, we work very closely with leadership in the community. That includes elected officials, school officials, principals, teachers, and, of course, parents, to talk about how we can have a positive impact in that community. We feel this model is very different from the historic model that a symphony orchestra has used, which is basically touring, going around the state, do a classical concert, and you leave. It's become, in our industry, known as a drive-by, and that's not considered a positive thing, obviously. So when we go into these communities, we ask those folks involved in the schools, how can we be of an impact in that community? So we literally, we're not prescribing what we're going to do, but we're asking folks how we can help. And the results have been just terrific. In fact, in Redmond last year, our residency started with these discussions and ended with we have ensembles going into the schools and working with children. We have in-service days working with teachers, and we have the full symphony concert. But one of the unpredictable lasting effects of the Oregon Symphony's presence in Redmond was the fact that the parents saw the impact of music with their children in the schools. And in fact, that's a district where music education had been cut drastically. And the parents were so moved about the impact on the kids that the parents raised themselves over $150,000 to buy new band and orchestra instruments for their children, the first time that had been done since 1968, I believe. So we feel good about the fact that our community music partnerships in these communities literally does have a lasting effect. It can be transforming. This year we are in North Bend in Coos County, and the response down there has been equally terrific. A lot of things we can't predict, but I can tell you that the communities we've been in have been so happy that the big symphony from Portland would send professionally trained musicians down and sit in front of a group of first graders and let them touch the instrument and play the instrument and do some creative things. We are a nonprofit organization, so that does mean that as part of our mission, we do want to reach out to every Oregonian and make sure that we can make a difference. So happy to answer any questions.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is John Mangan. I'm Regional Vice President for the American Council of Life Insurers, but also own a small communications business in Portland. And I'm talking today on behalf of Oregon Business for Culture and the Arts, which is the largest organization in the state of Oregon, made up of businesses whose sole mission is to encourage you and our peers to support all arts, culture, and the humanities in every form that you possibly can. We recently surveyed our 170 CEOs, many of whom support the Oregon Symphony and all the organizations you've heard from today. And we asked them, why are you doing this? Why are you an advocate for these things? And they listed three things. Number one, because arts, culture, and the humanities strengthens communities. Number two, because they stimulate the economy and create jobs. And number three, because they educate our children. Now, those are three things that all of us as business leaders believe firmly that these activities do. And as such, we see arts and culture as an essential infrastructure, not only of the larger cities, but of small towns. We've heard about some towns whose primary infrastructure is arts, culture, and the humanities. So from that perspective, Mr. Chairman, you asked earlier about the general fund. If this really is an infrastructure issue, then we'd ask you to look at it as a necessary and vital investment in the state overall, and in fact, in business. Because, to answer another question of yours, businesses definitely care about the cultural environment of their cities and small towns. And it's one reason large companies gravitate to Portland, because of Bill's leadership at the Symphony, and because of the history of that organization. We have a number of CEOs, frankly, who chose to locate in Portland and bring their companies to Portland because of the history of our great cultural institutions. Another question that you raised was about leverage. And this is where I get kind of excited about what OAC does, because I honestly believe that of all the dollars you spend out of the general fund, the dollar you spend at OAC is probably the most highly leveraged dollar that you spend. And I want to give you an example of how that works. Currently, I sit on the Young Audiences Board of Oregon. I mean, that came up earlier as one of the organizations that serves public schools. This is a small, hardworking organization, annual budget $1.5 million. About one half of that is raised by kids under the age of 16 during the Run for the Arts. They raise it themselves, running around a track with their parents and friends. The other half comes from businesses and individuals and foundations. And from the OAC, we received a grant this year, a very helpful grant, of approximately $7,500. So the way I look at it, you've put 50 cents on the table, and private companies, individuals, businesses, kids, and their parents raised $99.50. And that's pretty good. That's good leverage. In fact, we're actually leveraging it more than that, because we're creating services in the public schools that would otherwise not exist. Access, for instance, to free symphony concerts when the symphony allows us to do that, to the ballet, to the art museum, to the High Desert Museum. Anywhere where we have young audiences service, we try to connect kids to those activities. So in that light, we think it's a very strong investment. Encourage your support of the OAC. Over time, we'd love to see you increase that support as Oregon's economy improves. And thank all of you particularly for your own commitment to this area.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
About leverage. The Oregon Economic and Community Development Department has a program. It's a grant-loan combination program called the Special Public Works Fund. It works for rural communities for water and wastewater systems and other special public works type programs. What if this committee tried to work with you folks to modify the Special Public Works Fund statutorily to allow grant and loan dollars to be used for special public works related to, say, sound stages or amphitheaters, or who knows what the array of projects could be that could be used in small communities to perhaps fill the gaps in important community projects? What do you think?
Mr. Chairman, I would just, without any knowledge of that arena, just say that I would strongly encourage you to work with OAC on any innovative idea like that. That puts another resource on the table, because I know that general fund resources are always going to be tight.
Do you think it's important to support suburban communities? I come from a very rural part of the state. Do you think it's important to suburban communities to have amphitheaters and those type sound stages, museums, as cultural resources in terms of trying to build up a community?
Mr. Chairman, I personally do and believe that those create tourism, but more than just tourism from people outside the community. I think if you look at public schools, if you look at the arts and culture as basically an extension of the school system, which it is, because as a kid, I think all of us would agree some of our best education came outside of school when we went to the museum or the historical society, then I would say it's an investment in your own kid's future to do that. As far as the musical industry, I'd let Bill address that.
Sure.
I'd like to. Mr. Chairman, I think building edifices and structures to strengthen a community, I think, is smart, but the key in any situation is making sure that the operational capacity for the human resources is there. And that's why the demand has been, for example, in what we do in the schools around the state, we are replacing school teachers. And that's why it's so difficult for these local communities to supplant that, because that's an expensive proposition. So building structures, as you talk about, can be changing for any community, particularly rural communities where access is a challenge. But the operational aspects, I think, are key, critical, and actually the most expensive ongoing sustaining piece.
I think the case in point is in the Senator's area, and if you look at the Old Mill area in downtown Bend, taking a brownfield site and turning it into one heck of a community development project.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, granted, a very large model, but a model that could be duplicated in other parts of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So. Mr. Chairman, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, but the amphitheater piece of that is sustained through, you know, business enterprise and economic development that
you bet.
You know, Mr. Smith has put together. So
all works together.
Yeah,
right. All works together. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. I apologize that you had to wait so long.
No apologies.
It's worth the wait.
So, thank you.
Then the operations piece that Mr. Ryberg speaks to, I mean, that's funded out of Mr. Smith and trying to say association dues or whatever. It's not quite what it is, but just for maintaining the amphitheater.
Would anyone else like to testify this afternoon? Well, we truly appreciate the good afternoon we've had. I think this is very positive. I think we started off this committee in a very good and positive manner, and we look forward to tomorrow. I never realized the good work that Senator Westland did on the Cultural Trust until this afternoon, and I compliment him on that, and I appreciate Representative Avakian staying on top of me and reminding me how important art and culture is to the overall economic development of the entire state of Oregon. Unless there's any objection, we're going to adjourn for the afternoon.